This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. We thank you guys again out there for joining us. We know that you guys have hundreds of choices of different podcasts, and it feels like there's a new one every single day that comes out, but we appreciate you guys taking time to listen and give us your feedback. And so just a reminder for everybody out there that's listening, guys, we're always looking for great guests that are delivering value to your business. So send them my way, as well as, give us feedback. Let us know what you're liking, what you're not liking, so that we can continue to modify the show. Because ultimately, this is your show. I get to sit in the catbird seat and interview some really cool people. And today is no different. But we also want to know who you want to hear from. Do you want to hear from more operators? You want to hear from more technologists? You want to hear from new and exciting stuff that's coming about? Let us know. You know, hit us on the social channels as well as via email. Like I said earlier, today is no different. We are joined by a founder, and I think founder, is that right, Tommy? Founder, yep. and CEO of a brand called Ops Analytica. Tommy, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell us a little bit about who you are, and then we can talk a little bit about your product and kind of what you guys do as a business.
For sure. So thank you for having me, Jeremy. I really appreciate the opportunity to be a guest on the podcast. It's super exciting. My name's Tommy Yanolis, and I've been in the restaurant industry since I was 14 years old. I started off, my mom would drop me off at the Columbia Mall in Maryland, and I would make cheesesteaks and get cut early and have to walk around the mall till my mom would come pick me up.
I love it.
And I just, it's funny because my grandfathers were both immigrants to this country, Puerto Rican and Greek, you know, so I used to make a joke that I was born in a kitchen, but, you know, they both owned restaurants. And then my parents, my dad was a rocket scientist and my mom worked at Lockheed. So they had nothing to do with the restaurant industry. And then their kid came right back to the restaurant industry on his own, just loved hospitality. And so I started off cooking and I worked in a hotel. And then I went to college and I cooked in the cafeterias and learned how to cook catering and stuff while in my first college, which was Valley Forge Military. And then I transferred to the University of Denver to go to hotel restaurant school. And I was on the East Coast at the time, but I remember searching, you know, you had that big book of colleges, top 10 colleges, and you'd pick where you wanted to go. And DU, University of Denver, was one mm-hmm. of the top rated hotel restaurant programs, but it was one of the few that wasn't on the East Coast. And I just remember thinking, man, I've been my whole life on the East Coast. Let's go see Colorado. And I didn't want to go to UNLV because I said, that would be way too hot. I don't want to be there sweating my nuts off.
I love that. I love that. And it's funny, until you and I had talked, a couple of weeks ago when we set this up, I didn't personally know how much hospitality school. I'd always heard of Johnson & Wales and some of those East Coast schools, Cornell, yeah. Johnson & Wales, and obviously the Culinary Institute up in New York. But it's really cool. Tell me a little bit about that experience, because you'd worked in restaurants through high school and all of that. How was it going to school to learn how to work at a restaurant when you'd worked in your restaurant, you know, for 4, 5, 6 years, you know, and probably ended up working through college while you were in college, also going to school at the same time? How did that manifest itself? And, you know, what kind of things did you experience from what is it supposed to look like on the books versus what you knew it was really happening within the restaurant brands that you had worked on?
Absolutely. And when I got to DU, I really focused on country clubs.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think it may be the elitist part of them really appealed to me. And also I thought those guys make a lot of money. And as restaurants go, it's different. Like, you're not so much worried about the high volume. You're just more worried about managing the personalities of the members. So it's a little bit different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I really focus on country clubs, and I focus on cooking and working in the front of the house as well. And I started the Club Managers Association of America during that student chapter there.
Very cool.
And it was interesting because I really, like, I got to manage those pool bars, like in the summertime at a bunch of country clubs, and I got to cook at a really high-end fine dining club, which kind of ruined me from cooking because it slowed me down when I used to be kind of fast. Then all of a sudden I became too detail-oriented, and then I couldn't really go back to like casual cooking because I just was too slow. Like, I couldn't throw fries on a plate anymore. I had to like arrange them, you know what I mean?
But that's hilarious. Are you still that way?
Yeah, I'm slow.
Got you. That's hilarious.
yeah, it totally slowed me down because I had this, you know, because we were Russian service. We were actually like a fine dining club in the tech center in Denver, south of Denver. And they would do Russian service and the waiters would wear tuxedos and have white gloves. And they would all set the plates down and remove like the silver domes off the top, you know.
Every, a little over the top, huh?
Yeah. And so it was more about making a beautiful souffle or, you know, decorating the plate. And it had nothing to do with just banging out food. And it just wrecked me. And so at that point, I was toast there. But it was interesting because at the time, it was school was teaching you theory. This is how you run a great restaurant. This is how you run a great beverage operation, whatever it is. And then you're actually experiencing the real world. And you're going, well, they're not doing a lot of that stuff. I mean, they're doing some of it, but they're not doing all the stuff we're learning about, right? Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I got my first job and I realized I didn't really know anything. You know what I mean? Like I graduated, I got this job as assistant operations manager at this country club. And I realized, okay, I know the theory of running a restaurant, but I actually don't know how to run or a hospitality business, but I actually don't know how to do anything here. You know what I mean? Like, and it was kind of a scary thing where you're like, I'm Mr. College guy, look at me in my suit. But yet at the same time, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing. And luckily I had enough humility because I had worked in the trenches to go, I need to ask these people who report to me what the heck I'm supposed to be doing here. You know what I mean?
That's pretty funny. Before we get too deep into the recording for today, I wanted to remind you guys of one of the partners that was on the show back in April. The founder of Pop Menu, Brennan, came on and we were talking about reputation management and really managing your online presence. And I know for myself, one of the things that I always look for before I'm going out to a new restaurant or to any restaurant for that matter is kind of where they're at from a presence perspective. What does their menu look like on the web? And so the guys at Pop Menu have done a fantastic job of really managing their way through that. And so if you guys haven't already checked out the podcast that dropped back in April, go check it out. And they partnered with us on the podcast to offer $100 off of your first month if you go to popmenu.com/tech guys and check their stuff out. Great company, great product, and I would recommend anybody take a look at it. Well, and I think you would probably agree, and I'm guessing a lot of our listeners out there that have worked in restaurants realize that the restaurant, while the manager, you know, I mean, you can have some really good managers that are running the great shift, but at the end of the day, it's those key servers, it's those key, you know, cooks that are the ones that make things go within your restaurant. So you're this young green manager that doesn't have a clue what's going on. And this lady that's been at the country club for 20 years is probably like, kid, you know, this is the theory out of the book. This is the way things really work as you're starting to run the shift, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's sort of like what you see in a lot of those like army movies where you get this fresh young lieutenant out of West Point and there's a grizzled sergeant who actually runs the unit. And whatever always happens in those movies, and it's really true of those entry-level managers, is they're either those leaders are either smart enough to go, that sergeant is actually the leader here. And the best thing I can possibly do is, you know, learn to lead from this person who knows what the hell's going on, or I'm going to get blown up by my troops. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That's how I felt. And luckily I was blessed enough that I caught that and you know, I was like, okay, cool. I need
you
to
learn. Smart enough to figure it out.
Pretty cool.
Very cool. And I know, Tommy, you and I talked, you know, previously your career kind of pivoted from, you know, from the country club scene to some different stuff within the restaurant industry. Talk to me a little bit about kind of where that career trajectory, because I think all of the experiences that you've had from, you know, being a, you know, high schooler at the shopping mall, all the way through to country clubs and, you know, casual dining and all of those different experiences really are going to lead us down this path to where you're at now and what you've been able to create. So I want to give people a little bit of a visual as to the rest of your career trajectory until you started doing Ops Analytica.
Yeah. So I've had a ridiculous career. So through the August 12th of that first summer, so it was August 12th of 1995, I was getting my booty kicked at this place because I'd also walked into a political nightmare, right? I mean, we're talking way back in the day and I will start to jump massive swaths forward here. But I was talking to one of my good friends who's actually a bar owner here in Denver. And I remember chatting with her, and we were like 22, 23 years old at that time. And I remember just going to her, this sucks. I'm getting my butt kicked. I should just be a stand-up comedian. That would be so much easier. And she's like, you know, you should. What are you doing? You don't want to be in your 40s with a bunch of kids, living in the suburbs with a job, regretting that you never did stand-up when you were in your 20s, right? You should do it. And so I literally went, you're right, I should do it. Because I was class clown in high school, and I had done – like I'd been on stage at an improv show in college, just as like a person they pulled up, and I always made people laugh. So I literally just like called up a comedy club in Baltimore on Light Street called Winchester's. And I was like, hey, how do I become a comedian? They're like, come down in 2 weeks to open mic. And I said, okay, I'll be there. I'll write some material. And I literally went down, did stand up for the first time, 1995. And I remember halfway through my set, people were laughing. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. And this is what I'm going to do now. And so I literally started stand-up comedy just at open miking that summer. And then I got laid off in like September, October of that year. And I was so happy because I was like, woohoo, now I'm going to go do stand-up. And so then for the next 10 to 12 years, I did stand-up full-time for 90% of that. And I worked in the restaurant business. And I did every job you can imagine. I waited tables at P.F. Chang's. I waited tables at a Dick Sauce Resort in Chicago. I managed things. I mean, I just, any hospitality job, that was always my go-to because I had the experience. So I did a little bit of everything, you know. I managed inventory software. I cooked. I worked in comedy clubs, specifically here in Denver. Plus, I did stand-up that whole time. So I might wait tables for 2 months and then go on the road for 2 months and then come back. And, you know, I was just living that lifestyle all the way through 2005. And then in 2005, I just was like in my early 30s. I was broke. I always like tell people I just wanted a couch and health insurance. Like I didn't want, I was just tired. And I had always said when I first started stand-up, if in 10 years, I'm not making doing stand-up what I can make as a country club manager, because that's what I was leaving at the time, then I need to reevaluate this because I love doing this, but I kind of just want to have a good life too. You know what I mean? And so I had a wonderful decade of doing stand-up full-time, but I was getting kind of burned out and I was just, the comedy scene was morphing and, you know, I don't know. And I just like, I was actually leaving the Vegas Comedy Festival where I had had like a rough experience. And I remember like I was driving back with this other comedian to Denver. And I remember just calling up the University of Denver where I got my undergrad and just calling the administration office and going, hey, I want to get an MBA. How do I do that? And the lady at the MBA school was like so floored, right? Because she's like, what the hell? Nobody, like this guy's done zero research, right? Like you don't even know. You got to take a GMAT and apply for school. And I was like, cool, GMAT, apply for school. Got it. Thanks. And I just hung up. Didn't even tell her my name. Nothing, you know? And that's, awesome. That's what I did. I went to GMAT classes, you know, figured it all out. Like, because, you know, I hadn't been in school in 10 years and needed to like brush up on a bunch of stuff. And then I got in there and then I went to grad school and that kind of changed my trajectory. Met my wife, got married like a week after grad school, and then ended up you know, not doing stand-up. I mean, I did stand-up during grad school, but then after like 2007, I kind of stopped doing stand-up at pretty much at all because I was married. I had an MBA. I was trying to find a real job, you know. And of course, that's right when the economy crashed. So that was nice. And then I ended up at Quiznos. And at Quiznos Corporate, which using my MBA and using my restaurant experience, and my first job there was franchise assistance program manager. So everybody, so this Quiznos is just crested 5,000 units. They're starting to lose units because they're built on a very shaky foundation. And I'm the guy you call in the middle of the financial crisis in the biggest franchise meltdown in history, right? I'm the guy you call to ask for help. And it was my second MBA. It was absolutely heart-wrenching. And I learned more about human nature and business than I ever did anywhere else in that 10 months that I did that position, just about watching people's businesses fail and their dreams be crushed and just not really being able to help anyone because they were all pretty much too far gone by the time they called. I couldn't, what I was able to do for them, which was to give them delivery, would be like throwing somebody who's drowning like a cinder block. Build a bridge. You know what I mean?
Like, yep. Yeah. But, no. And that's a tough one. I mean, I've got a lot of restaurant tours that we've talked to that have gone through that, you know, that either the peak and then the valley of, you know, like the, when you're having to close down stores and figure out franchisees that put their whole life savings into a brand and had it just struggle. Well, and I appreciate you going through that. And I know we've taken a little bit longer than we typically would, but I wanted people to understand kind of the breadth of the experience that you'd had, because I think working casual dining, working fine dining, working, you know, fast food, fast casual really gives you a lot of credence to understand what really makes a restaurant go, what really, you know, what are the KPIs, what are the data analytics that need to happen? And so I'd love to have you kind of talk, because it's, you know, going on, what, 5 or 6 years now that you, since you founded Ops Analytica. Talk to us a little bit about how did that transition happen? Because you've had some unique experiences, you know, stand-up comedy, waiting tables, you know, managing restaurants, being at corporate, to now, you know, saying there's a problem out there that I want to figure out how to solve. And you're solving it in some pretty unique and fantastic ways with the product. But I'd love to hear what that journey looked like and where did you get to and how did you get there?
Sure. So it actually started at Quiznos. They came to me. I was like the ops, RSC ops leader. And they came to me and they said, look, we're doing 4,500 to 5,000 audits a month on all these locations and we're doing them on paper. We need to be able to report on these. We have no clue what's happening. And they were just getting this paper back and it was useless. And so at the time I was like looking at different products and you know, there was like Steritech and EcoSure, and they would let you pay like 10 bucks an audit, but we didn't have any money to do any of that because restaurants were failing left and right. We were losing, I don't know, a couple restaurants a week, maybe 10 restaurants some weeks. So I ended up building my own auditing platform on like that 2008, 2009 Palm Windows-based smartphone. So this is like pre-iPhone. I built like, is it a giant web form? Right.
That's awesome.
And then we could download the data into an Excel, and then I could do analysis. And for the first time in the history of that brand and a lot of other brands, I had the ability to take audit scores live from the field all around the country and actually report on what we were seeing. And that was the impetus for Ops Analytica. So I left Quiznos in like 2009 and I got hooked up with some buddies from grad school, and we got into this workflow business process management software world. And, you know, my parents were software people. My dad was a rocket scientist. My mom worked at Lockheed. They both had coded. So it didn't seem strange to me that I would be able to figure this out. And so we ended up owning that company for 5 years. And about 2013, I had an employee and he needed a training project to learn how to do the software. And I said, we had run out of ideas. I said, go build that thing that I built at Quiznos. And I explained to him what it did. I said, go build it and let me see it so I can see that you can code something. And we built it. We made a video of it. I showed it to my old boss, who's a big restaurant guy and now the CEO of another company. And we put a video up on LinkedIn and which was interested in buying it. And I said, whoa, there's a market for this. Maybe this is something we could do. And so we ended up not being able to sell it to Which because at the time it was just an idea and a video. It wasn't really ready for market, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then I spent the next 18 months at night and on the weekends. I must have pulled 100 all-nighters during that time just getting this thing built to it could be like an enterprise-level platform. And I got it into a restaurant chain on the East Coast. And then they used it for 8 months. And then we basically beta tested it and we made all these revisions. And we were coming up on the end of 2014. And I was like, I don't want to do consulting anymore. It's too hard. This sucks. We had some capital left in our business. And me and my partner both were interested in SaaS. And so we kind of shut down the other business. We moved over. We started Ops Analytica. We funded it with our own sort of retained earnings from the other company. And we got some sweat equity developers and other people to join us. And we just launched Ops Analytica in 2015. And what made us unique, I think, at that point was all the big platforms in our space were focused on auditing, right? Auditing is when you send out somebody from corporate and they go out, maybe it's an area manager, maybe it's an auditor, and maybe once a month, the minimum, which only a couple chains do that, but mostly once a quarter, someone comes in and they do anywhere from 1 to all day long audit of your restaurant where they're looking at everything from a cleanliness perspective. They're looking at your books. They're looking at your every part of your business. And auditing was a big deal, right? And that software had been around for years. And the thing about auditing is this. Auditing is great to get a general sense of what your system-wide issues are across all locations, because you get the same audit in every location. And therefore you can see like, hey, we have an overarching problem with ranch dressing or whatever it might be. But auditing doesn't do, it's only once a quarter and then you're gone. And so nobody knows what's happening the rest of the time. And auditing is great to benchmark things, but it's daily checklists that really drive, or daily processes that really drive behavior change and are actually what are going to take an okay restaurant location. And if you can hold them accountable to following their stuff, they can get better over time if they can follow the processes that you've laid out for them, right? And so we came in really going, hey, audits are good, but dailies are more important. And there's also a kind of, since you're kind of into the technology part of things, there's also a very interesting sort of component, like programming component, right? Which is, it's really easy to code for one thing. Anybody can code for an audit because an audit is one thing. The biggest lift in programming is 1 to 2. 2 to 1 million, right, is easy once you've done 1 to 2. But but going, and so all of our competitors were really focused on auditing, which was basically a singular checklist that was run everywhere. We came out of the gate programming to do multiple different checklists every single day. And that's just that technological difference in platforms gave us a huge advantage because we were able to accommodate all this other stuff. And so we launched in 2015 and nobody cared.
Yeah. Well, isn't that how it always works?
Yeah. You know? We're like, wait, what? We've sunk our whole lives into this thing. All of our extra cash. What do you guys mean you don't care? But yeah. Everybody in 2015, because mobile tablets were, you know, tablets have been around for a couple of years. iPhones have been around for a couple of years. That transformation, it really had spurred everybody to stay focused on stuff that more like your company does, which is just making sure they had online ordering, making sure they had apps, making sure they had curbside and delivery handled. And so really for the next couple of years, you know, we were always like selling people on the notion of our company, but like, you know, 80% of the people were like, well, that's great, but we're doing a new POS implementation right now, or we're getting online on, or we're getting our apps spun up. And so we were still winning deals and growing, but it wasn't what we expected. We obviously had hoped and expected it would be at the very beginning, because the entire industry was really focused on getting parity with their competitors on the sales side of things.
Well, and that was one of the questions as you were going through this, Tommy, is who is your typical sale to? Because it's like, I feel like, you know, and just to recap for our audience that might have missed it, these guys at Ops Analytica are really trying to create some brand standards and some ideas on how should it look? How should the food look? How should the you know, the environment, all of the things and all of these different checklists from safety to what should it look like, especially when you get beyond and putting software in place to be able to manage those things. But who is your client? Who's not only your user, but who's the one that typically you guys would work with to develop these standards and to drive them into the piece of software?
Sure. So that's a great question. I'm going to break it down for in a couple of ways. So first of all, every restaurant chain already has their operating processes, their food safety logs, their shift readiness checklists. All of that stuff is part of every restaurant chain's SOP manual, right? Especially the franchisors. That's what you're buying from the franchisor. You're buying all of these processes and procedures. Mm-hmm. The issue has always been that they have been done on paper, right? You either bought the Red Book, which is a Denver company, by the way, but you either bought it on the Red Book, or they provided you the PDFs and you printed them out and put them on a clipboard, right? Whatever. And then in the past, because you had these things on paper, and you had no visibility into what was happening in the locations, then the restaurant companies go, well, we can't see what's actually happening. We can't afford to have a guy in there overseeing at the restaurant level every single day. So we're going to give them these processes and procedures because this is what we know that they need to do to be safe and to be consistent and to protect the brand across all our locations. But we have no way of managing that. So we have to think of other ways to manage that. And so what they basically did was they invested all their money and resources into training and getting people to memorize stuff, right? Because they were like, well, we can control that. We can control how much we train these guys and how much processes we build, but we can't control that they're actually doing it. That was one issue that they've always had. The other issue is because they couldn't collect that data in a meaningful way. It was just like me at Quiznos. I had a stack of, because originally when they came to me at Quiznos, their solution was you and your secretary or your assistant, you're going to data enter 4,500 audits a month into an Excel spreadsheet. That was their solution to get data. And I was like, hell no, we're not. That's when I got creative and built my own, right? But like, they don't have access to any of this operations data. So they've always used other measures, a combination of other KPIs to back in operations. So they'll say, well, what are the sales? What are the food costs and the labor costs? What are the customer satisfaction scores? You know, and they'll look at those things and they'll come up with, well, and maybe an audit score here and there. And they'll go, okay, well, this restaurant's a really good operating restaurant because they've got good sales. Their costs are kind of in line and their customer sat's fine, right? But like, those are actually, those are all lagging indicators of operations, right? Sales and all that stuff happen. You know, if your operations are good or bad, they will affect your sales and profits over time, but they don't necessarily show up on a day-to-day basis. And so that's kind of how they addressed the problem really from the beginning of multi-unit restaurants. We will create all these processes. We will train and spend a ton of money training people on them. We won't be able to hold anyone accountable. And then on the back end, we'll try to figure out what's happening by looking at all these other lagging indicators. And together, we'll figure it out that this is a good restaurant. But like, there's just a lot of flaws in that, right? But there was no better way of doing it. So that's what they did. They did the most efficient thing that they had at the time. And with Ops Analytica, we become a true measure of your day-to-day operations because we take your processes, right? And when we're implementing you into the system, we take all your checklists and your processes, and then we try to help our customers streamline them and make them more digital friendly and try to make them quicker and easier to use. But we take all these processes they've already created, we put them into our platform, we schedule out the day, the week, the month, the year. So our theory is kind of like we take the guesswork out of running the location because you open it up, you're looking at your, if I'm a manager, I can come in, I can look at these processes, I can see everything I need to do today. And it might be like today's Friday, so that's hood vent day. So that just shows up on Fridays, right? Uh-huh. All the little things that you need to do so that you don't have to think about it. You can just simply go out, execute the schedule as it's in front of you, and you don't have to know. And then we're capturing all the data so we can identify trends. We're notifying people if there's a problem. We're helping people fix problems in real time. And so it's just, if this technology was available when, like, you know, the McDonald's brothers created McDonald's, they would have implemented it on day one. You know what I mean? Because they were system, process driven, data driven operators, but it didn't exist until now. And or it didn't really exist until the early 2010s, right? And so,
well, it's actually really interesting to me, Tommy, because I, you know, I mean, I know what you guys do, and I think back to not only the guests that we've had on, but just even different, you know, restaurant operators that I've talked with over the years. I don't hear a lot of people talking about solutions like what you're talking about. I've heard of people doing manual checklists, like you said, and, you know, and they put it into their side work or they put it into their red book, but I've not heard this overarching, you know, business process management solution that can get you the data that you need to. And I genuinely love this idea. And our longtime listeners will laugh because they know from me selfishly, half of why I do this is because I love to learn and I love to be exposed to different things that I'm not aware of. And so I'm just shaking my head the whole time while you're talking through this, because I can see how much benefit. What do people most of the time do today when they don't have a solution like Ops Analytica? Is there 25 other competitors to what you guys do? Is it just that they're not doing it or not doing it well? Is it that, that they're doing it still manually, and you know, once they get to 50 or 75 stores, then they kind of you know, putter out? What happens there in the world that you live in as it relates to this?
Sure. I think our biggest competitor is still paper, right? And I would say our other biggest competitor is managers not understanding the kind of data they can get and the kind of control they can have, and then with a platform like ours. So really, our biggest competitor is people don't know what they don't know about having these types of platforms.
Because there's not hundreds of them. It's not, you know, you said it earlier, almost everybody has a point of sale solution, yep, but not everybody has something like this. And so it sounds really cool because you guys are forging such new ground in this area. I apologize for cutting you off, but I want people to understand that what you're doing is forging paths of stuff that people have done historically on paper, but really getting it into a place that you can make the business better and make better business decisions because of the data and where it comes from.
Well, yeah, that, and I would suggest that, like, you know, a POS system took, like, if when you went from a cash register to a POS system, a lot of people balked. Are you kidding me? My cash register cost $30 and now you want me to spend $1,000 for a terminal? And then now if you ask that guy 30 years later, 40 years later, he would go, there's no way I wouldn't have a POS system at this point, because the value that this data brings to my life is insanity, right? Mm-hmm. And I always compare what we're doing to that. We are the POS system. We are that stream of data, but we're focused not on the transactional thing, which is handled by the POS. We're actually measuring the hardest data there is to measure, which is the human collected data from the day-to-day operations of your business. And what we're seeing, just so you know, is like when your process compliance is high in Ops Analytica, that is overarchingly telling you that you've got, telling you a lot about your management team at that location, but it's also predicting customer satisfaction, sales, and revenues. So if you see an upward or steady trend on your Ops Analytica process compliance, that means that team in that location is doing they're organized, they're getting their stuff done, they're detail oriented, they're focused on, you know, making sure that they're ready for every shift, that they've mm-hmm. done all the little detail work, and that translates to better shifts. That translates to, you know, that translates to the guy not having to run to the walk-in to go get lettuce or ham in the middle of the rush, because it's already stocked underneath in his reach-in, and they can just get that second, they can just get that replacement and keep moving forward. And just that little thing translates into speed of service. And that means the line on your drive-through didn't get too long. So that guy driving up goes, hey, I can actually get my sandwich in a reasonable amount of time. Let me go through. Like, this is operations. Like, we're managing, for the most part, all the like little things that take to operate the restaurant during the shift. And we're making sure that people are prepared, they're safe, they're ready for guests, that the restaurants are clean, helping them control all the controllables that they have so that guests have good experiences. And that's really what our business does. And we provide this wealth of data. Now, mm-hmm. here's the thing that blew my mind though, Jeremy, is that when we started off doing this, and we have big chains now that are using the platform, but we always said it's all going to be daily food safety stuff, right? Like, but I have a customer, and when they started with us, they told me, we thought we'd have four or five like processes in your platform, a couple of checklists, some food safety, some readiness, a self audit, you know, we expected four or five processes that we would just kind of manage and, you know, whatever. They now have over 100 processes that they've built themselves, because it's very easy to do. And they use the platform truly as their operations management platform, as their field management platform. So all the stupid scheduling compliance that you have in Seattle and New York City and all these rando things. Like if you need to get data from the field about anything, or you need to get the field to do anything, Ops Analytica is the platform that they use now. So LTOs, making sure everyone's got their menu boards up, making sure they program their registers, all the things that you need to do for an LTO so that when people show up, they get, they can use their coupons and the boards are correct. They, I mean, they manage the entire field operation through our platform, which that blew me away. Like 85% plus of the processes in our platform have nothing to do with the food safety day-to-day stuff. That's just the given. It's all the other corporate departments are utilizing it to do manage more of just their day-to-day job versus sending out an email and trying to coordinate 5,000 replies.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. It's almost like you've done this podcast thing before, Tommy. I was gonna let you do a little quick plug because I was about to ask you, you know, talk to me about the ways that some of the clients are using it. And so I appreciate you you cut me off on the pass. But why don't you give a, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Ops Analytica, and we're gonna wrap here in just a few minutes. But how did we get introduced? Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about that? Because I think it's it'd be great for our audience to cross pollinate, and I think they'd love to hear what you have to say on your podcast that kind of talks to different restaurant operators and different people out there.
Well, I'm super active on LinkedIn, and so is Jeremy. And I was like going through my LinkedIn feed, and I saw his podcast popped up in my LinkedIn feed, and I was like, oh man. And then I started checking out his podcast. I'm like, oh man, I got to talk to this guy. And so I reached out to him and I said, hey, I want you to be a guest on my show. Because I have a podcast too called The Order Up Show, where I interview people in the hospitality industry from every aspect of it. I mean, I've talked to everybody from Jeremy has been on my show, but I've talked to like CEOs of restaurant companies. I've talked to guys that are helping farmers in South Africa. I got tech guys in India. If you're basically related to food or hospitality, I want to have you on the show. I talk to GMs, I talk to everybody because everybody's got a great story in this business. And so we just have a real nice conversation. And so that's how I found Jeremy, is I saw his podcast and was so blown away by it. I said, I want you to be on mine. And if you're would be blessed enough to have me on yours, I would love to be a guest.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you jumping on. And I was just laughing because almost every time I've been about to ask a question, you'll just jump into doing it. And I'm like, oh, I better let everybody know that you've got a podcast out there as well, because I think it's important for these guys to cross pollinate. And Tommy and I did record to be on his show, and I hope that you guys all check it out for our longtime listeners, because he's got some fantastic guests and some great content for you guys out there. Today's episode is brought to you by the team over at 7Shifts. You guys may recognize that name because I had their founder on the show in July talking about the inception of what it is that they do related to labor management and staff management and scheduling. Great guy, great origin story related to growing up in the restaurants and solving a real problem for his family's business. You may also recognize their name because they were recently in the news because they just took a $20 million round of funding from the Union Square Hospitality Group, which those unfamiliar, it's Danny Myers out of New York City, his group that committed to work with the 7Shifts team and help fund their continued growth. For listeners of the podcast, you guys can check out the software for free for 90 days by going to 7shifts.com/restaurant-technology-guys, and they would love to talk with you. Great restaurant people, great technologists, and a really great product. Sorry to get off the Ops Analytica stuff, because that's really what you get to do in your day job. And so I love that story of really managing the data. Can you give me one or two quick hitting, you know, what's some real huge business value, either from a safety perspective, from an increased efficiency, increased profitability? Is there anything that you can share with our audience? For those that are still maybe skeptical, they're like, sure. Yeah, I've got a system figured out, you know, where you can give us some real concrete data to get them, you know, maybe a little bit, pique their interest a little bit more about how Ops Analytica can help drive better profitability, drive better guest satisfaction, better safety, all of those kind of things.
Absolutely. So here's the deal, right? And I just actually wrote this blog, and I'll release it either today or next week. But the fact is that we are currently partnered up with another customer sat company, right? And this customer satisfaction company measures, you know, surveys that the customers have, right? And so we have some joint clients. So what we started doing about 3 or 4 months ago was we started looking at how does Ops Analytica, what we would call process compliance, meaning how well are the restaurants doing, are the locations doing at completing their checklist on schedule? Because one of the things that we do is we schedule the checklist out operationally where they make sense. We don't want people to come in at 7 a.m. with a cup of coffee and a cigarette and bang out their dinner temp log at 7 a.m. That doesn't help anyone. We need them to temp it between 4 and 5 so we know we're safe, right? So we tracked what operations were happening as managed or as measured by Ops Analytica, and we tracked what the customers were saying about the restaurants and how they were operating in this other platform. And we took that data, and what we found was that when I offset it by 1 month, looking at the customer sat data 1 month after the Ops Analytica data, that we had a lockstep, highly correlated chart that showed that when Ops Analytica went up or down, that the same thing happened with customer satisfaction a month later. And so, you know, people don't associate doing these daily checklists with actual operations, with actual food safety, with actual sales or customer sat, because of the fact that nobody does them. When you have,
well, it's too hard to even bring those two together as well. I mean, you can see it at a macro level, but definitely not at a micro level the way that you guys can do it.
And it's also offset, right? So like the problem is that nobody's ever done these processes because no one's ever been able to hold them accountable to doing them. And also no one has ever had this data because it's all locked up on these clipboards everywhere.
Yep.
And so they don't know what it would be like to run the same restaurant that they have today with everybody doing exactly what they were supposed to do, the way they were supposed to do it, and to be completely organized. They only know what the status quo is today, which is that they have managers and employees that aren't really using those processes consistently, and this is what they get. So the status quo is nobody does this stuff on paper, and this is what you get. And this is what you've always gotten because they never had a period where they had a system like ours and then they stopped using it. So this is like what you have today is what you've always had. And that's basically a C-level customer satisfaction rating and the current sales you have. And so that's what they're used to having. They don't know what it could be like if they could really dial it in and hold everyone accountable. And I mean, a lot of these brands or even our customers are just figuring that stuff out today as well. And so, you know, we're really at the infancy of this level of technology. But I will say operations efficiency is going to be the next big battleground, right?
Yep.
5 or 6 years ago, if you had delivery or you had a mobile app and your competitor didn't, you had a competitive advantage. Just like if you were a chain in the early 80s and you invested in a POS system and your competitors still had cash registers, you were at a competitive advantage because you had the data and the technology to make better decisions. Now we're all at the same level. We all have the same amount of sales-based technology. But where we're going to start battling is on store-level profitability and store-level operations. And when you do these processes, they didn't invent these for their health. They invented them because they realized if we check these 25 things before the shift starts, we can run a better, more efficient shift. And maybe we can get that extra 5 cars through the drive-through. But that 5 cars adds up every single meal period, 363 days a year. And all of a sudden, you know, that translated to another $25,000 a year in revenue, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
And then that gives corporate, if they're a franchise, an extra 8 or 7 or 8% of that. Now they're doing more ads. They're doing more LTOs. They're making more creative products. When you go to get your next store, you might be on an end cap. Like this is like, we are in an operations business, right? That's what we do. We operate. We're little manufacturing facilities all over the country delivering and serving food and beverage, no matter where it is. Yet most of these guys have no insight into the day-to-day operations. Could you imagine if you were talking to the CEO of IBM and they were like, how many Watsons are you creating this year? And said, no clue.
Yep.
Now, I how are the Watsons going? Couldn't tell you. We have no insight into what's happening in all of our manufacturing facilities. They would run that person out of, you know, what business in the world is creating something but has very little actual visibility into how they're creating it? But that's the restaurant industry. And that's what we're trying to solve for them, is to give them that visibility and that data so they can simply just use the data to make better decisions. Because like we said, what we're seeing is if the ops analytic trend's going down, then we know that in the near future, your customer satisfaction trends can start going down. Because
which means your sales are going to go down, which means it's a downward spiral until you fix it.
Exactly. But if you could see, wait a second, our ops analytica trend went down last week. Oh, area manager, go call that GM. What's going on? Oh, man, we've been understaffed. Okay, well, you got to focus on even more doing your processes. If you could catch that in a week versus, you know, in 2 months from now, you could save that many more customers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love where you're going, Tommy. And I think it's critical for restaurants. And I'm going to reiterate what you said earlier, which is if you don't have something like this, you're behind the competitor who's next door who does have this, because at the end of the day, it's critical to start to manage and measure these things, continuing to do it the old school way. And I know that I have a lot of guests on these podcasts and we'll talk about, you got to be thinking about these things. But guys, I'm telling you that people every single day are investing time, energy, money in building and buying tools like Ops Analytica to make their businesses better. Tommy, I really appreciate you coming on. If people want to get in touch with you and your team to preview what it is that you guys do, how it might work within their business, what does that look like for them?
Sure. I think the best thing to do would be to check out the website. And our name is spelled weird, so let me spell it for you. It's OPSANALITICA. So that's the Portuguese spelling of analytics, just so you know. So that's opsanalytica.com. And you can just search restaurant checklist app and you'll see some of our blogs. But obviously, you'll put us in the show notes as well. But yep. Check out the website. And then if you're interested, just jump on a demo. No big deals. Right? We'll show you what we got. We'll show you how people are using it. And then we'll let you go from there. You know, we're not like crazy people.
Crazy hard salespeople. Yeah. Well, and again, I love that we got into what we talked about. And I'm excited to see kind of both the growth of where you guys are at and continue to cheer you on the podcast sphere that we're also both in. And we're both super passionate about helping restaurant operators continue to make their business better. And so thank you for what you guys have done there. To our audience, guys, I know that you guys have got, like I said, hundreds of choices of podcasts to listen to. And so for those audience members out there, we thank you guys for your time. While you guys are out online, you know, I'd love for you guys to recommend the show. Go rate it on your favorite podcast player, just because it does end up getting our word out about different things that we're doing so that others can hear the fantastic guests. Tommy, thank you very much for your time today. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.